It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carm and Brendan Nell.
Welcome back. We're back. It's To The Last Drop, and I'm Brendan Nell.
I'm Liam Del Carm.
And I caught Liam with a mouthful of coffee in his mouth. Offside there, as we should. But that should be a penalty, but we'll talk about that later.
And you could advance me 10 meters as well, I think.
Well, it's been a very interesting rugby weekend. I mean, we're back today. There's been a host of impressive games around the world. Champions Cup, I think we'll start off with that, and then we'll talk about some other rugby that's taken place. But yeah, let's kick it off with the two massive Champions Cup games. No surprises there. The two teams with 9 stars between them are one of them is going to get an extra star come in a couple of weeks. Leinster were impressive. The offensive defense, as Jacques Nienaber calls it, was pretty impressive. But they sort of blew Northampton away very early on. And Toulouse, well, when they start steamrolling, Harlequins were brave, but bravery doesn't count much on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think both games, at least the results, are fairly predictable. Leinster went about, as clinical as you'd expect them to be in a knockout game. And as for Toulouse, they were very much in the ascendancy and then did lose their way a little bit. And that's the kind of thing that they cannot, afford to repeat in the final because Leinster will blow them away. So, but in the end, two very sort of predictable results.
Yeah, and it's the two biggest teams in the competition's history, the two teams that have won it the most, the number one and two seeds. So, I suppose it's the final that the competition wanted. And it's going to be a huge heavyweight final as well. So, very intriguing in a lot of ways. I think to me, though, semi-finals, I know people are sort of in both Toulouse and Leinster sort of wondering about how they let the opposition back in at times. But you're in the semi-final, you're playing quality opponents. Guys have played well to get there. You're always going to give away something in a game like that. You're not going to dominate for 50 points, in the semi-final. And we don't want to see that in any competition anyway.
I was going to say, you're spot on. I do feel, though, especially in the case of Toulouse, that there were moments where their game management let them down. You always feel with them that they have an extra gear, and if they do need to pick it up, they've just got so many threats. As I said, there were a few moments where they did drop their guard.
Playing in Toulouse, any stadium in Toulouse with that crowd, or the same as Croke Park, I suppose, you're going to have the crowd on your side. So it's going to be interesting at a neutral venue how that affects them. But you certainly could feel at times that the crowd, especially in the Toulouse game, and the French TV directors were affecting some of the play quite there was one high shot. I can't even remember where it was in the first half. And you didn't even see a replay of it. But the one on DuPont was replayed like ad nauseum. And you just couldn't get it off the screen until there was a call.
As to be expected, entirely so.
I agree with you. Toulouse to me are just a side, they're still clinical, but Toulouse are the type of side that you just feel that could hit you with 3 tries in 2 minutes if they need to.
Yeah.
And they've just got that sort of quality. So, it's going to be an intriguing final. But I think Jacques Nienaber was quite open about it, about how, all that you really need to do in the semifinal is win. There were some of these Leinster reporters who were, said, why didn't Leinster put them away, Northampton away? And Jock's been there before, and he referred to the England result in the World Cup as one of those games. Doesn't matter how you win it, you win it. You win it, you go home with the trophy. So that's all that really matters. But have a listen to himself chatting about the game afterwards. Talking about how Leinster are going to approach the final.
I would probably say the main takeaways was I thought we were, I think the whole world will know that, that we were probably for 60 minutes, we were in control. We had good control over the game. And then obviously with the quality of opposition that we had, and you can see why the Saints are the top premiership team currently. They never kept attacking and coming at us. And obviously then we had to finish out the game in the last 8 minutes or so, which some of it we did well, some of it we did really well, some of it we could have done better. So that was probably the take home. So I think from our view, there's lots to work on going into the final. But not thinking about the final just yet. I said that to the lads as well. I think if we lift our heads up too high and start looking at the horizon, we might fall over this. We might fall over the obstacle right in front of your face. I think it probably boils down to execution. I think you must take the opportunities that you create, and that's it. You know, you must if you get an opportunity, you must capitalize on it. And probably we had a couple of opportunities which we didn't capitalize on, which was our own wrongdoing, some of them, but some of them was also due to the quality of opposition that we had in the Saints. Now, I think, like I said, now we probably the main thing for us is not to focus too much on what will happen in the future and start focusing on what we must do and try and get right during the week preparing for Osprey. So I think as professional athletes, as coaches, you get onto the next thing as quickly as possible because that's the reality. I mean, what happened on Saturday happened. It's in the past. There's nothing we can do about it, and nothing that only the lessons that we can take out of that we can carry into the future. But the future was today's training session, and we must focus on the future. We must focus on things that we have to get right for Saturday against Ospreys. Yeah, I must say that's probably the nice thing for me. I don't have a big backdrop or big history of. For me, it's just listen. I know Toulouse is a quality outfit. We had players that played there when I was with the Springboks, so they were very. They were always very. They spoke well about the club. They spoke well about the people there and the rugby program that they run. So I expect a proper test when we play them in a couple of weeks' time. But to be honest, I watched the game yesterday, but I was doing my review, so I probably watched it with chameleon eyes, one eye doing the review and one eye looking what's happening there. So, but I'll get to them. We'll get, as a coaching group, as a group of players, we'll get to them and give them the due, the respect that they need to get whenever we have to play them. But like I said, the team that needs respect now is probably Ospreys. Not probably, it is Ospreys, 100%.
And Jacques is spot on. You know, Leinster have tripped up a couple of times now at the semi-final stage. This is very much a competition that they've put into sharp focus. It's one that they want to win. And of course, I mean, there's also, I mean, they're fighting on many fronts. So, you know, just get the result and move on. Try and win the final.
Yeah, and I mean, if I look at the Challenge Cup, and I know there's a bit of a debate amongst some of the journalists about how much you could look into the Challenge Cup, but I mean, for the Sharks, that was an absolutely amazing game in Clermont. You really thought they were down and out and buried, and they came back to win it. And I mean, another 1-point victory over a French side for South African side, sort of adding to all the litany of them. But you think to yourself, for the Sharks, this is so important for them. It might be a second-tier competition in some people's eyes, but it's certainly something to give them something for the season, and it could kickstart them. If you look at how Glasgow lost in the final last year, now they're top of the URC, you can easily make that argument that it could kickstart your next season.
Yeah, and it also goes back to you play what's in front of you, and what is in front of them is the Challenge Cup and the opposition in it, and they seem to be relishing that. You know, that competition. I thought that they did look dead and buried for a while there. I think the thing that will stand them in good stead is how they found ways to get back into that game and winning a very tight contest in a European competition, because that's the kind of muscle memory that you want to build when you're going to play in a Champions Cup. Of course, that is their stated ambition as well. I mean, we've spoken to the owner, and we've spoken to various people at the Sharks, and that's obviously one of their long-term ambitions as well. So, I mean, that kind of result and the way it was achieved will stand them in good stead. I think a lot of people will say that Clermont should have won that game. They had not just the better opportunities, but they looked the sort of better oiled team for most of that game. But the Sharks, to their credit, I mean, found ways to get a foothold and win that game. I mean, even Etzebeth, I thought, was absolutely massive, sort of dragging his team along and finding ways of exploiting weaknesses in that game. So, you know, good on them.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, I think the Sharks, if they're going to look at themselves and Joey Moncalo, the defense coach, looks at that game again, they were increasingly brittle on the outside, on the wings. Clermont found ways through their defense on the outside way too easily and scored a number of tries that way. But yeah, you can't fault the bravery to get back into that game. And of course, the one man who stood out, who's now suddenly become the biggest asset in the Sharks, is Siamasuku. And yeah, what a season he's having. 4 consecutive Man of the Match awards. And really, he's just been a revelation. I suppose you could look at it 2 ways. You could say to yourself, well, perhaps that's because the Kerwin Bosch and Butter Chamberlain, who they had before them, play very different games and probably weren't as effective for the Sharks. And Siamasuku's just brought something totally different. His cross kicks, his kick passes have been exceptional. And just the way he reads a game for a young player like that has certainly brought him into, I suppose, Springbok consideration.
Yeah, I thought that he played with a lot of composure. He was calm. That to me are the, you know, sort of the hallmarks of the player thus far. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, I know the Sharks in that position have been quite troubled the last couple of seasons, and he doesn't seem to play with that burden. I think he, you know, kind of puts his own stamp on it. And despite the pressure, I mean, didn't hardly put a foot wrong. So you've got to really commend the way he's gone about the business. I mean, obviously, kicking, what was it, 8 successful kicks. And, of course, that clutch kick at the end, that was just stuff of legend. So, yeah, it is going to, you know, catapult him into higher conversation. And we'll have to see how that develops further down the line.
Well, I mean, I think people might scoff. Some non-Shark supporters might laugh at the fact that I'd say, yeah, Springbok selection. But when you think of the options for the box out there, you got, yeah, obviously Andre's there, Marnie's there, but there's not too many other guys putting up their hands. Jordan Hendricks has been around for a couple of seasons. He's obviously being seen as a future guy as well. But yeah, I mean, Galaxia coming through like that, he's young, he's playing with composure, he's playing with all those Springboks. That certainly brings him to the forefront. And depending on what the options are and what the game that Rossi wants to play, I won't say against Ireland, but you might see him make an appearance somewhere like Portugal and then slowly get blooded into that. If they do feel that he's, you know, somebody who can play 20, 30 tests for them.
Yeah, I think it's good to have options. So we saw in the build-up to the last World Cup where our depth in certain areas was tested. So, you know, there might be 2 guys or 3 guys in front, but if you invest enough in the pipeline, then, you know, you're going to have to dig into that at from time to time. And I think it's Flauf obviously is one of those key positions where you want strength in depth.
Yeah, and I mean, it just takes 2 weekends of a mishap or a knee injury or something like that, and you've got some problems. And yeah, unfortunately, Andre has had a number of injuries over the years. Marnie, not so much, but it could easily become that sort of argument. But I think we'll probably get into a bit closer to the time a bit more those sort of limitations.
I think it's also probably worth saying that if Andre is going to play in the next World Cup, then the way he's managed over the next few years is going to be absolutely crucial. You don't expect him to play every test because, I mean, that the toll on the body and, you know, mentally, it's quite draining. And we know what the guy possesses. So there might be opportunities for other players to get some playing opportunity.
Yeah, and I mean, as we've seen, I mean, the big question has to be is for any player now from this World Cup squad, will they still be okay in 4 years' time in Australia? And You know, if not, you've got to build that depth. And they didn't really have that opportunity in the last two World Cups to really build depth. So now hopefully they'll be doing that. So we could see a lot of guys coming through. But yeah, I mean the other, we didn't see much of the other, I didn't see much of the other semi-final in the Challenge Cup. But Gloucester, they seem to be the cup champions. They've been in how many Challenge Cup finals and cup finals in the last couple of years? Haven't won much. So I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for the Sharks. But certainly they've got an interesting opposition in that final.
Yeah, I think it's five finals for them. So they are regulars in that sense. It's hard to predict this one because you've got one team that is established in that competition and kind of knows how to win. And you've got another team that doesn't have that experience, but they certainly have the firepower and the wherewithal to win games. So it's also one where the Sharks, if you look at their history, if you take it back to Super Rugby, sort of international cross-continental competitions where they haven't had silver, where they've been one of the better teams, you know, in those competitions, but the silverware has eluded them. So, you know, they'll be desperate to lay claim to the Challenge Cup. So it's going to be very interesting final.
While we're talking about Springboks, we're just going to touch on one of the more bizarre stories of the week. I don't know if you saw it there, that a certain ex-Springbok fly-off, Mr. Elton Yankees, who's got a colourful past, should we say, went and put up a post on Instagram telling people that despite testing positive for a banned substance, he would be back sooner than later, and he's got all the evidence on organisations, and these are his words, that aren't doing things right, whatever that meant. I'm not quite sure what that would mean, because surely your test is what counts in sort of a doping case. I think there was sort of an insinuation that there might be more to the story, but without anything further than that, and now he's gone and deleted the post, which makes you wonder, is this a storm in a teacup, or is this a much larger story waiting to be played out? And I think we both have our ideas, but I think Elton's making some rather interesting choices lately.
Yeah, in some ways it is also sort of straight from the Elton Yankees playbook. There's always a bit of intrigue, always a bit of mystique. You never know what's coming next. The way he's decided to tackle this issue is interesting, because you've got to ask yourself, what is he going to do beyond his playing days? Does he envisage a career in rugby still? And if so, how is he going to sort of smooth paths to do that, to achieve that? I think it's probably best to wait until, he comes forward with more. I mean, it's pointless.
Yeah, I think the problem with this is unfortunately, as you say, it's the Elton Yankees playbook. We've seen things like this before, and both you and I know about off-field incidents that haven't been reported and things like that in his playing days, where he perhaps stepped out of the line here and there in terms of team protocols and things like that. And it was always the same excuse. It was always somebody else's fault. It was always something else. Whether it's something like that in this, whether he does actually have something on somebody else, who knows? But it's, you leave it so murky and it's that somebody, you can almost insinuate anything from his statement. But it comes back to the same thing. Unfortunately, 99% of people who are busted in doping, positive tests, you look at Apiwe Deyanti, it was never him, it was somebody else's water bottle or something that he drank. Chiliboy Ralepele was the same, also wasn't him, etc. Unfortunately, with any of these type of cases, it's always the same sort of answer. And until Elton shows us anything different, it's just that.
I think we can coin the phrase, let's wait for the B song.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things. You throw something like that out there, if you don't back it up, then, well, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, turning to URC this week, we're back with the URC, so three rounds left. Some big games coming up, and we're going to quickly run through those and give some our thoughts on them. I think some big clashes, none bigger this week than Loftus-Versfeld, where the Bulls face Log Leaders Glasgow. And Franco Smith has won at Loftus-Versfeld with other teams before. He's a shrewd operator. He'll know the place and what he's going to face quite well. The Bulls, on the other hand, coming off a 60-point win over the Ospreys, won't be overawed by the whole thing. They'll be quite confident going into a 2 o'clock game with quite nice weather. It looks like it's about 26 degrees this weekend at Loftus and at altitude. So that's going to be a very intriguing game.
Yeah, the interesting part for me is Glasgow have got the lifted late. They will only fly midweek. If you think of how Munster went about the challenge of playing two games at altitude, base themselves at the coast, give themselves a proper run into the first game and then go back to the coast and then trying to acclimatize their way that way. So they've gone the other way. Glasgow's gone the other way. So it's sort of a late arrival, staying in Johannesburg or just north of Johannesburg. And we'll have to see how. I mean, obviously, Franco's given this a lot of thought, so it'll be interesting to catch up with him just to ask him what the thought process was there. They certainly arrive here with a lot of momentum. In the last five games, it's 5 wins for them. Bulls, 3 wins in their last 5. So Glasgow very much the side with the momentum. But this will be a proper test of, their credentials, their title credentials. A poor performance at Loftus, I think, will leave some mental scars as well. So it's a big test for them, one way or the other.
Yeah, I think a big question, I mean, a larger question is also next week when, they face the Lions as well. What Lions team are they going to face? If the Lions can get a result there, I think we say it every week the Lions play as well, will help the other teams in the competition. And you never know what Lions team you're going to get there. Is it going to be the tame one or is it going to be the one that roars? So that's also going to be a huge part of this tour. If I was Glasgow, I'd definitely be targeting at least 5 points out of this. You'd probably back yourself to beat the Lions. And whatever you get at Loftus would be a bonus. But they're certainly going to come for the Bulls.
Absolutely. They would certainly want to sort of test their game because, I mean, they're going to be in the playoffs. So and they'll probably get a home quarterfinal and a home semifinal, possibly. So this match, as much as anything else, is also preparation for that. So I think they'd want to leave Loftus, if not with a point, certainly with take some confidence away from the encounter because. Those battles further down the line will be probably even tougher than having to go to Loftus.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game either way. I think we'll start off with Friday's game. Stormers are going on tour. They've taken all their Springboks with them on tour. They need to win basically everything in the remainder of the competition. Obviously, we're all hoping that it doesn't put them on a collision course with the Bulls, but I think the permutations are if the Bulls basically win everything and the Stormers win everything, they end fourth and fifth. And that could put us on another quarterfinal of that North-South derby, which I don't think anybody in South Africa really wants, to be very honest. But except for, I suppose, people who organize these games, because there'll be a full house and a lot of excitement, a lot of banter going on before the time.
There'll be huge hype. Yeah.
They're playing the Dragons. It's a game they should target. The Dragons haven't been good this year. And with their Springboks, the Stormers should have too much class, even in Wales. And if they really are serious title contenders, they should win this quite well.
Yeah, I mean, the Dragons only, 1 win in the last 5. The Stormers marginally better, I think 3 from their last 5. So they've got a bit more going for them. They've got players coming back significantly. I think also they've got a couple of loose heads coming back. Satis is probably one of them that will alleviate the pressure on the guys who have been standing in. So it is looking up for them in terms of the injury list. They've also got Sasha Feinberg and Gumzulu back. Gives them options in midfield. I think those are all, big positives for the Storms, but they need to now back that up on the field. Get past the Dragons. Not the Dragon. Well, it's Connacht as well, I suppose. that Lion wait. So, you know, two massive matches before their last one against the Lions, who will probably be the fresher side in that final contest, the final league contest, because they have to travel to Cape Town, but the Stormers have to come from Europe.
Well, the good thing is that if you get the 5 points this week, you could probably start permutations and giving yourself, knowing what you want to achieve or who you want to play, should I say. If you know you're going to play away from home, where would you rather play in the next couple of weeks? Especially by the time they get to the Lions game in the last round, they'll definitely know what they need to do. So it's going to be an interesting tour. But listen to John Dobson and Frans Molhaber talking very briefly about their tour and what their objectives are.
We put ourselves a lot under pressure with our first tour we had, and obviously with that sort of quite devastating defeat to the Ospreys. We're sitting in a position where a while ago we're looking at where we wanted to play in the playoffs and going for the top, the top couple. Now we just got to make sure we're playing Champions Cup. So we're under a lot of pressure.
Anyone will tell you that it's very important. We all know how tight the log is. It's going to determine where we end, obviously. And we want to go for our own playoffs. Tough challenge for us, but yeah, we're really looking forward to it. And, it's going to be a desperate game for us.
It's unusual. We're traveling late to a Friday game. So there's not much we can do in Wales. That was almost the plan. We're trying to do everything here last week. So I think it was good for us last week to have our plans for Dragons already sort of in place. It's going to be a bit edgy in terms of time and recovery, but if we'd left a day earlier, we couldn't train here this week, and it'll be hard to train in Wales. So it's been a good prep in terms of the extra last week's work on the Dragons. I thought we'd done a lot of good stuff this season, the way we fought back after the tour, our European campaign, getting out of the pool of death, coming so close. A lot of good in that respect. And I don't want to be like, if we don't do this, but that is the subtext, isn't it?
Friday night's also got another game, 9th place Edinburgh against 16th place Zebra. I don't think it's much of, and playing in Edinburgh as well. I think the Scots are going to, and Sean Everett's going to be looking for this win, a 5-pointer here to put them into the top eight. They're very close. But a big game for them as well.
I think they've got a fairly favourable draw towards the end of the league stages. I mean, obviously, they're very much in the hunt for a place in the top eight, and I think the way the draw is shaped will favour them. So, they will look at this particular game as a sure 5-pointer to get them kickstart, that final search for a place in the top eight.
Yeah, and then going on to Saturday's games, Bulls Glasgow kicking us off. At 4 o'clock on Saturday, Scarlets at home to Ulster, who are 7th. Scarlets 14th. Ulster will be targeting that one for their top eight hopes. You can't see the Scarlets. They haven't been great this season, so you can't see them doing well. But they could push Ulster in a surprise. They're being optimistic.
They could. I mean, Ulster haven't played the same authority this season, so there is that possibility. But I think now, they have something proper to play for. I mean, it's if they lose to Scarlets, I mean, do they really deserve to be in the top eight? You could ask.
Yeah. Then the Sharks at 4 o'clock playing Benetton, which would have been the Challenge Cup final if Benetton had beaten Gloucester. In Durban, though, and with the Sharks, I think, having a bit of momentum. Benetton have been a strange side this season. They've been tough. But, can't see them beating the Sharks in Durban.
Yeah, the odd thing is Benetton was very high up the points table at some point. A bit of a wobble of late, only 2 wins in their last 5. And despite all the Sharks' woes in this competition, I think they've actually scored more tries than Benetton. So an interesting matchup. And one where it'll also be interesting to see how the Sharks put out their stall in terms of personnel, because I think they'll probably, they've got a bigger fish to fry later in the month.
Then the big derby of the weekend, Munster against Connacht. Munster should win this one. I think they're probably favourites where they're sitting now and the way they've been playing in the last couple of weeks. Connacht still top eight hopes. They're sitting at 6th at the moment, so they don't want to lose that. And I suppose in a derby game, like South African derbies, you can't write them off. But I think Munster should probably take this one.
Yeah, I don't think we should dwell on this one too much. Both teams obviously have something proper to play for. Munster can still get into the top two. So, you'd have to say Munster.
some interesting ones to play for. Then on Saturday night at 6:15, Lions playing Cardiff. Cardiff have been unlucky a lot of the season. They've lost lots of their games by less than 7 points. Coming to the Spark, Lions still have a chance to make the top eight, although that's starting to fade fast. I don't know. They should be able to beat the Welsh side, but with this Lions side, we never really know.
Yeah, they should be able to beat Cardiff. If they beat Cardiff and then spring a potential surprise against Glasgow, that puts them back in the conversation, and then they have to go to Cape Town for that last game against the Stormers. And they actually won there a few seasons ago. I think in the inaugural URC, they went to Cape Town and beat the Stormers there just before Christmas. But, you know, then they will also have something decent, a proper carrot that would be dangled. But they need to get over the first hurdle, and that's Cardiff. I think they'll get over the first one. The other two, not so sure.
Yeah, if you're not going to win your home games, you're not going to be in that conversation. So that's the bottom line for the Lions. And their inconsistency has been about the most consistent thing about them this season. So, and then the last one, which I think, again, depends which team gets played. Leinster hosting the Ospreys. And after last week, there's some probably battered bodies. But, yeah, Leinster at home, first or second string, should be quite easy to beat Ospreys. Or Ospreys also caused a few upsets this season. It should be quite an interesting game to watch.
Yeah, the Ospreys have been one of the feisty teams in this season's URC. You wouldn't put it past them to run Leinster close. I mean, I still didn't expect Leinster to lose at home. But the Ospreys have consistently punched above their weight. Maybe I shouldn't say punch above their weight. They've been by far the best Welsh franchise this season. And you've now almost come to expect a decent performance from them. I think it will be interesting. But again, it probably a lot boils down to how Leinster will set out their stall. I don't expect the team that played last week to play en masse again.
Yeah. I think with that game, my only comment would be that there's two ways of playing the Ospreys. You can either be like the Bulls and hit them hard and hit them early, or you can let them drag you down into an arm wrestle, and that's where they've got a chance. I'm not sure if Leinster allow them to do that, then the Ospreys have a chance, but Leinster hit them early, I can't see them coming back. Not in Dublin.
No.
Yeah. So those are our URC predictions for the week. We're going to finish off with one more. The Under-20 Rugby Championship is going on in Australia. We've seen some interesting results. South Africa drawing with New Zealand in their opening game. Australia losing quite heavily to Argentina. And then the All Black juniors bouncing back and beating Argentina in their second game. And the junior box having an utterly woeful game in the wrongly, how can I put this, the really bad Sunshine Coast, where there was torrential rain the whole time. And really playing terrible against Australia. And even though that, I mean, my whole takeaway from the game is this Australian team, despite the commentators trying to make it out as if they were superhuman, are quite ordinary. Mm. And the junior box losing to them was a huge disappointment.
I was just thinking of something. Imagine buying tickets to a KC and the Sunshine Band concert and you end up getting wet, wet, wet. But that's besides the point. Look, If you look at the result against New Zealand, I think most people would have expected South Africa to be very much on the front foot against Australia. Also, when you consider the way Australia were defeated against Argentina, the woes they had in the scrum, it turned out to be exactly the opposite. They dominated South Africa at set piece. The scrums, I can barely remember the last time a South African team was dominated to that extent by an Australian team. And then in the second half, the junior box also lost their way in the lineouts. And I know that conditions were tough, but the Aussies played it better, certainly in that facet. So, you know, if you don't win set-piece ball in those conditions, then it's going to be a tough afternoon, and that's how it proved. And I also just felt that the Aussies were more assertive. I mean, there was a certain level of passiveness about the junior box that you wouldn't have expected them wouldn't have expected that in that particular encounter. So that was a hugely, I'd say, deflating defeat.
Yeah, I think to me, just one, the amount of handling errors, the amount of, yeah, just the way the box lost the ball, the junior box, whenever they had the ball, lost the ball, especially in that first half. And obviously the red card didn't help. It probably helped them in the end that there was a 20-minute red card and the players could come back.
Yeah,
but, but it wasn't a great performance up front. I thought they could have been a lot more direct. And it always just feels to me that back line that they picked, there's a lot of talent there and a dry field. I think they would have been exceptional. But they don't look like a wet weather back line, if I can put that.
Yeah.
And tactically, they don't play very well.
Yeah, I think the changes that they've made, I mean, they certainly didn't play with the same authority at fly-off. You had guys in midfield who could bash it up straight, but not always looking for opportunity a little bit wider, you know, when there is a potential overlap. So, you know, a bit more game awareness in that game as well would have stood them in good stead. I think, you know, there's a lot they can take out of it. But now the problem is, what do they have to play for in the last one? Because a draw and a defeat, that's, you know, competition.
Just judging on what we've seen, I mean, I expect the All Black juniors to probably smash Australia in that last game and win quite handsomely. And that'll probably mean that they take the title then. So, yeah, I suppose pride, they've got to get the performance back. But let's have a listen to Coach Bafana Nkateko talk after the game about exactly where it went wrong for them and what they can do.
Yeah, it's a bit dark at the moment, but I think if somebody, well, you know, just lots of opportunities, just really, you know, probably our skill set in looking after the ball just wasn't up to it. Perhaps our decision making around our set piece wasn't up to it when we've got into the right areas as well. We got ourselves into the right places, which is what, you know, was a big thing from the previous game. And then from then on, it was about execution and actually just getting to, you know, getting into a system. And you could see once we built a bit of momentum, we really could really build some pressure. Yeah. Red card probably hurt us a bit because, as you know, when you've got 14 guys on the field, everyone else has to fight that much harder. And takes a lot of energy away from you. But I don't think anyone goes out into the field to intentionally hurt other people. So, you know, probably a bit of a brain fog moment there, but, you know, he learned. Yeah, I mean, like as I said to the boys after the game, you know, I said, if your set piece doesn't function at test rugby, you pretty much got no chance, really. And today, I think we had two in their 22 lineouts, and we didn't convert, and we didn't get the ball back, so we have to scramble there. We have to go back and look at the video and really understand what was going on in the scrums. But yeah, clearly we didn't get ascendancy, which is something that we'd really hope to do today. And yeah, that's working against you because it just takes away so much energy, and it just, you know, you have to fight and other ways to fight and stay in the game. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Obviously, you know, it's probably nicer to learn while you're winning. It's not nice to be sitting on this side of it. We understand what this is about. All the teams made changes today, massive changes. We understand that it's about the learning process and the development of players. You know, that never really goes away from us. And we're also probably getting some answers around, you know, the players, where they're at, what they need to work on going forward. The only way they can get that is through these type of matches and these types of pressures. You know, again, it would have just been nicer to be on the learning side while you're winning. I guess we, you know, we've got our backs against the wall now from that perspective. You know, so we just have to make sure that we find ways to get better for Argentina and show that we are learning and we are actually moving in the right direction.
Well, on that note, it's a big week of rugby ahead again for us. Lots of URC action. And, it's quite enjoying the autumn weather. Liam, I hope you'll be opening a few bottles. I was in Dalscrum last weekend on the off weekend for my teams. I had quite a few. I'd like to take the trash away from where we were staying. We'll notice the little bottles that they can recycle. So hopefully you're going to have the same sort of weekend.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I see that in my future, not the distant future. But I also was thinking before the show, you know, about getting to a couple of wine farms at some point. And it needs to happen sooner rather than later. Because it's one thing going into a bottle store, opening a bottle of wine, and I'm having a good time. That's one thing. But going to source is quite another.
I think we'll definitely have to do that. But we must maybe talk offline about some plans there.
Yeah, I know somebody who can probably help set us up. Maybe a guest, you know, in a few weeks can help make that happen.
Sounds very good for me. So, okay. That's it for this week. We'll chat to you again next week. See you then.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.